Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. As we move back into regularly scheduled programming, it's such a pleasure, such a joy, and I'm here again with Kevin O'Donohue. Big thank you to everyone who supported during this recent fun drive.
Absolutely. It was a fun drive.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that we have to do, and of course we look forward to being able to support WBAI, but we look forward even more to being able to come back and bring you the sort of programming that you're used to, where we explore topics that are relatable and interesting and intriguing.
And what a nice way to come back, because our topic today, I won't even introduce it, you introduce it, but it's just dawning on me, this is a great, great follow-up to the fun drive, which was all about connection and relationship and intimacy with others. And today's show is quite different.
That's right, Kevin. Today we wanted to talk about...
What do we want to talk about?
Well,
today?
It's a media. It's a form of media, right? And in the last 20 years... it's become the dominant form of media. It's become more dominant than music. It's become higher grossing than Hollywood. And it's certainly at least as dominant as FM radio. Let's put it that way. We're talking about video games. And video games have become, as I said, the dominant form of media.
Video games are more popular than Hollywood?
You believe it. Believe it, they
are. Hollywood movies?
That's right.
They sell more games?
They do.
Than they do tickets to the movie theater.
Well, more people go to see movies, but, you know, an average game costs around 50 or 60 bucks.
Oh, okay.
Whereas a movie ticket will cost 10 to 15, right?
Okay.
But the games industry is grossing more money than Hollywood.
Wow.
And this has been the case for a few years now. Hmm. And, you know, we did some research. We did actually quite a bit of extensive research. And we found the top movie of all time in terms of revenue, when you adjust for inflation, is actually Gone with the Wind. Because adjusted for inflation, Gone with the Wind did almost $3.5 billion in revenue. Number two is Avatar, did around $3 billion, and number three is the most recent Star Wars that came out last winter.
The new one.
Did just shy of $3 billion, and fourth on that list is Titanic, did around $2.5 billion. But when you look at the top grossing video games adjusted for inflation, the numbers dwarf that, right? Space Invaders came out in 1978, has had many iterations over the years, re-releases. Space Invaders, you want to guess, Kevin, how much it's done?
$10 billion.
$14 billion.
Wow.
Adjusted for inflation. Pac-Man, $13 billion. Street Fighter II, which we'll hear some of the music from that a little bit later in the show, over $10 billion. In revenue, adjusted for inflation. And since it's such a dominant cultural force, and we know that the demographics of games have changed dramatically, we thought we'd talk about it. We thought we'd explore...
Well, that's the question. What is the positive mind takeaway to video games?
Right.
I mean, movies obviously can nourish us and nurture us and make us feel good and make us feel positive. What can a video game do?
Well, it can certainly do a lot of things on, you know, both constructive and destructive. And that's what we wanted to break down today and discuss. And we'll be taking your calls a little bit later in the hour. But what do we know about video games? Well, we know that over the last 20 to 25 years, they've become an enormous cultural force, right? Inspiring all kinds of other media, including film. There are now movies coming out based on video games.
Really?
Yeah. One of the big ones coming out this summer is Warcraft, which is based on a video game of the same name.
Are there guns involved?
You know, I'm not sure about Warcraft. I don't think so. I think that's more of a sort of medieval stuff, you know, swords.
See, that's my bias against the video games is like the popular ones are all about violence, right? They all have guns in them. And you were telling me before the show that that's actually not the case.
Well, I did some research on all kinds of games that are released, and only about a fifth of games are what are so-called shooters, right?
Okay.
That involve guns. And you know, we did some more research. We have some interesting statistics. It turns out the demographics of video games are changing and changing rapidly to the point where almost 50% of players are now women. And, you know, the stereotype, the old stereotype is video gamers are young men, you know, maybe adolescents, high school or college age, you know, in their basements playing games. But that's actually changed over the last 20 years or so.
And I have to tell you, I'm really surprised to hear that women buy a lot of video games. I'd wonder if we could put out, an ask for a call from a woman gamer later in the show.
Sure.
I'd be curious what kind of game she's playing. I wonder if she's playing with guns.
Well, we know that people are choosing video games over other activities like watching TV or going to the movies. Mm. And I think it's important to explore why. You know, and I'll say from a personal standpoint, I am part of that 80s and 90s generation of kids who grew up in sort of the heyday of the rise of video games. And so I've experienced it firsthand, whereas Kevin, as we were talking about earlier before we went on the air, you haven't so much experienced
it
firsthand.
Pac-Man, that's as far as I've gone.
Which, as we just know, which we heard, is
one of the highest
grossing games ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that games have changed, and it's now much more of a social thing. Whether people are playing in a room with someone next to them or playing with someone on the internet. For example, Julian, who has been away on a job this month, Julian and I play a game together online.
Yeah, I was fascinated to hear that. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. So it's on the internet, and we meet up, and we have headphones and microphones, and we can speak to each other directly. And it's a community sort of cooperative experience.
Can more than two people connect at the same time?
Sure, yeah. You can have a dozen people on at the same time.
Wow.
Kevin, you could join us. We could all play together.
No. It's too much eye-hand coordination. I couldn't do it.
But so we know that this has become a very increasingly prevalent cultural force. It's everywhere. I mean, you get on the subway now, and everyone's playing games on their phone. And again, it cuts across all kinds of lines. It cuts across age, you know, ethnic background. It cuts across gender. I mean, everyone's playing.
Yeah, and, you know, and as a therapist, Ben, you know, I have to put out the question there. What do people think when they see people playing these games on the subway? You know, there must be a lot of layers. I know I've had a lot of different reactions seeing people play these games on the subway. So we'll throw that out later in the show also. What kind of reaction do you have when you see people playing games on the subway? Might tell us, what is the psychology of game playing? You know, what's the human side of it? What is the entertainment side of it?
Well, I think there's, you know, pros and cons for it, for sure.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, it can become a dependent thing. It can lead to compulsive playing. But we also know that it improves problem-solving skills and curiosity. And you mentioned hand-eye coordination. And believe it or not, yes, it does improve visual acuity. I know that may be surprising, but it's true.
I'm not surprised by that.
There have been studies done that show that, you know, certain types of games, fast-paced action games, will improve visual acuity.
It's almost like you have, like, blinders on. When I see people play these games, I'm not surprised that their visual acuity is better when they put the game down. Because it's almost like a tunnel vision. I mean, people get so focused on the game.
Sure.
That I'm sure their eyes are just on the game and nowhere else.
Well, I think a big reason that people are choosing games over more traditional media, like television or film, is that it offers much more of an interactive experience, right? So think about it, right? If I want to watch TV or watch a movie, you know, I set the channel or I set the movie to start playing, and then I go sit down and I don't do anything. I just sit there and absorb.
Mm.
Absorb visuals, absorb sound. Absorb the story that they're telling me.
Right.
But with a game, I can become a part of that. I'm interacting with it. And games have now, you know, become sophisticated to the point where they do have plots, and many of them do play out like movies.
Hmm.
So I think that's what's drawing people in. And again, we're going to be taking your calls a little bit later this hour. But it is true that this has become a...
I wonder if during games, like the brain chemistry... You know, dopamine is constantly being generated playing a game, whereas when you're watching a movie, I would say that the happy brain chemical would be oxytocin most of the time.
Sure. Well, we know for a fact that there are dopamine and other brain chemicals released through gaming. Because video games create a system of rewards, tasks and rewards that the player then...
So you're always pursuing. And that's the dopamine chemical, pursuing. And it's nonstop, right? You just keep pursuing. So it must be. And then when you get to the destination, what chemical? Is that like oxytocin then? I remember when we did the shows on oxytocin.
I think it would maybe be more of a shot of serotonin.
Okay.
And the dopamine is activated through the various reward systems that a game creates.
Yeah.
So a game creates problems and then asks you to solve that problem. And the reason that I think people enjoy it so much is the reward trigger in the brain when you've completed that task and you feel this small sense of accomplishment and you want to feel that again. And so, as I said, you know, it can lead to compulsive and, you know, dependent playing. You know, people can use it as an escape, and that's something that we should be cognitive of as well. Because it's, you know, as we know, it's not always black and white, right? There's a lot of gray. And we do try to explore all sides of issues that we like to talk about. So, you know, not your typical video game conversation. Kevin and I have been discussing this for, you know, a few hours now. We discussed it yesterday. And there are things that we disagree with, right, Kevin?
I mean, totally.
There are a lot of things we disagree with when it comes to this subject. But, you know, we can have that disagreement. It's fine.
Well, you've been using these throughout your life. I mean, these have been staples throughout your growing years. You've had great experiences with these things.
That's right.
So, I mean, do you, like, have you been really excited by playing a game when you've accomplished something? You get a sense of accomplishment from playing a game?
Sure. More so in my younger years and less so now.
So what's the thrill now for you?
Now the thrill of games is as a social tool.
Okay.
As a bonding activity.
So you really play the games that connect you to other people.
Right.
You're not one of these guys in his basement playing by himself and not connecting to people.
Besides, I don't even have a basement, Kevin.
Okay. Well, you have a basement in your mind somewhere.
So, you know, for me, you know, each one of my friends has a different type of game that they like. I mentioned, you know, there's a game I play with Julian online, and it's this big open world, and, you know, we build houses out in the woods, and it's a lot of fun, and we have a big group of people that play together. But, you know, there's other people. For example, I have a friend who loves the baseball games.
Mm.
And so, you know, when we get together, we'll sit down, and we'll play a game of baseball. And, you know, he'll pick his team, I'll pick my team, and it's just like a real baseball game, but we're managing and playing as the players.
Right. So no violence, no guns. This is a real interaction with another person.
Sure.
And positive outcome. I worry about the people that just, and I don't even know the games, but the people that just play the games that are only with themselves.
Right.
And have
no other.
As a
solitary pursuit.
Yeah, and have no other really activity in their life that gives them as much of a thrill as fulfillment, because this is an isolated exercise, a very focused exercise, you know, that can lead to an addiction of some kind.
It can, but I wonder whether the addiction is on the same level as, say, a substance addiction, or if it's not closer to an addiction like a gambling addiction, right?
Yeah, the chase.
Sure.
It could be. One way to know is the withdrawal symptoms. What happens when you stop it?
Okay, so give me an example.
Well, you know, there are a lot of different symptoms when a person stops a drug. So, you know, you get anxious, irritable, you have cravings, you spend a lot of time obsessing about the drug and trying to stay away from it. Restlessness, you get a depressed mood. I mean, I have clients who play games, and if I say to them, what if I take your game away? What would happen to you? It's like, you know, my blanket. Don't take away my favorite blanket. You know, it's almost like separation anxiety.
Right.
So there are multiples of symptoms, and it tells me, oh, he's crossing the threshold to addiction of some kind. So, yeah, it could be gambling, it could be substance, but whatever it is, it's causing anxiety when you take it away. Like, for instance, smoking. You know, I remember, you know, when my dad was smoking, he says, I'm not addicted. I said, well, what would happen if we take it away? And he's like, oh, no, don't take that away.
Right, I can stop any time I want.
Yeah, right.
Just not now.
Yeah, couldn't happen. And then, you know, but the restlessness and the anxiety, I mean, it's so obvious when the drug is taken away. And the same thing with games. I've seen it happen with games when a mother tells her child, no, you can't play your game, you can't have it. So it is kind of masks, it kind of does mimic the symptoms of addiction. And we'll talk more about that later in the show.
Sure. I mean, but at the same time, Kevin, isn't just about anything potentially addictive? I mean, look at sugar. How many people out there are addicted to sugar and they don't even know it? And then, you know, there are real health consequences to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we wouldn't just say, let's not give anyone sugar. Let's keep sugar away from all children forever. Right? I mean, everything in moderation.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Sure. And the danger is what happens when it's not. And when it's not monitored, if you can't monitor it yourself, do you have your parents, older people, guardians, monitoring it for you? And if they're not, you know, in your formative years, it's a really tough thing to kick.
Well, I would say, Kevin, that a parent who is unable to lay down boundaries and rules with their child around video games has bigger problems than the video game. Because if they can't lay down the boundaries and rules with the video games, where else are they failing with boundaries
you're
and rules?
You're absolutely right. So it's actually a great gauge on parenting skills. And, yeah, the finger gets pointed back at the parent. So it's a good lesson, a good gauge for them to find how successful am I at parenting that my child won't listen to me when I tell them to put the game down. And it can be a wake-up call. So, you know, it can have its good effect.
More so than the finger being pointed at the parent, Kevin, I've seen the finger pointed at the makers themselves of these games, especially
the violent ones.
Yeah, sure. I mean, then this is a huge topic, and everyone has their opinion. Everyone, you know, stands on one side or the other. Very few people are unsure of how they feel about this one, right? I remember in 1999, after Columbine, you know, this horrible, tragic event that happened, it was very, very quick after that for people to start pointing fingers and accusing the games themselves of being the culprit. But here's the thing. The games that they were accusing of being responsible for inspiring the acts were some of the most popular of that era. So, you know, how come they didn't inspire the millions of people who they were playing those games, you know, if they were responsible for inspiring a couple? And I think that is an important distinction. I mean, can a video game really lead to violence if a child has been taught to manage their anger and aggression by supportive parents? You know, I think the parenting is very important to consider.
Sure. Yeah, and now there's a new book out by the mother of one of the Columbine shooters.
Is there?
Yeah, brand new book, and it's a bestseller, actually.
Well, I haven't heard of it.
And it'd be an interesting question to see. Does she blame herself in any way? Did she miss the signals? Back then, it was new, so who would know the connection between gaming and violence? And we still don't know if there is a connection.
Right.
So, you know, the mothers shouldn't be held accountable.
And it should always be noted that correlation is not necessarily causation.
Okay.
However, you know, when you look at the violent crime rates of the last 20, 25 years, it was at a high in around 91, 92. And ever since then, it's been gradually yet consistently dropping. And yet, that is roughly the same time period. I mean, the Super Nintendo was released in 1991. Right? And that was a console that really revolutionized gaming, at least in-home gaming. And ever since then, video games have become more and more of a cultural force. And at the same time, we've seen, you know, the violent crime rate continue to drop.
So the ascendancy of gaming has been directly correlated to the decline
of violent crime rates in society.
In society.
Now, I'm not saying that there is a causal relationship. I'm just saying it's an interesting correlation when you consider all the claims made that they actually inspire violence.
Right. But this is the thing. I mean, and we talked about this before the show. And again, this is something I'd like to put out to the callers later in the show. The violence that these games might produce or or let's say aggression, may not be showing up in society out in the street. You know, they might just be showing up in the home where the kids are exposed to it and watching it. Now, we could have a big argument about this, but it's anecdotal. So we're wondering if there are parents out there who could call in and tell us, do you notice any change in behavior with your children who are watching or playing these games? Aggressive behavior. And what happens if you take the games away? So, you know, the whole drama about this game,
Absolutely. This
gaming stuff would be interesting. But again, it would be anecdotal. I will say that Psychology Today did a study, 20-year study of the connection between video games and aggression. And they made a recommendation, the American Psychological Association made a recommendation to the gaming industry to reduce the amount of violence, like kills in a game, from, let's say, 20 to 3. And they had an impact. The study had an impact. It changed the business.
Wow.
So
I'd be interested to see what they say to the movie industry, because they're also incredibly gratuitously violent movies.
Yeah.
And I don't think that those are...
Well, is there a rating system in gaming?
Yeah, just like there is for movies, you know, and it follows roughly, you know, a similar trajectory as the movie ratings of G, you know, PG, PG-13, R. It's roughly along those lines.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You know, they have a E for everyone, uh-huh. And actually that's the majority of games that are released. And then they have T for teen and M for mature audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And those are guidelines for parents on what to buy for their kids. There are also restrictions, like a 12-year-old kid can't walk into a store and buy a mature game, just like they couldn't go in and buy a rated R movie.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there are
And
lots
every kid
of,
wants the M one, right? They all want
those are some of the most popular ones.
They are.
I mean, see, GTA 5, which was released at the end of 2013... sold $800 million in its first 24 hours on the market.
Wow.
That's more than the majority of movies do.
Is that
rated M? Oh. And it became the best-selling entertainment product of all time.
Wow.
And the entertainment product, that means that covers all media, mm-hmm. entertainment, like movies, music, games, everything. So, you know, very interesting. There's a massive response to this stuff. And you mentioned studies, Kevin. I mean, there's all kinds of studies that we found in research, you know, both pro and con, both supporting the claims of, you know, video games being constructive, productive uses of time, as well as the opposite. And they all come from, you know, pretty respectable sources. I mean, in our research, we found studies from Stanford University, from University of Wisconsin, from the University of Geneva in Switzerland, and even from the federal government doing studies on this stuff. And there's conflicting opinions, but reputable studies finding, you know, for both sides. So I'd love to hear from callers, you know, as Kevin mentioned, from parents of kids who play, from gamers themselves, you know, if you're a player and you want to weigh in on how games have affected your
and
life.
And a female player. Female.
All kinds of players.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to weigh in on how games have affected your life, for better or for worse, we'd love to hear. We're going to be taking your calls in about 5-10 minutes, so hang tight. But, you know, right now you're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr. I'm joined here in the studio by Kevin O'Donohue. And we're talking about video games, one of the great cultural forces of the last quarter century. And believe it or not, they do gross more money each year than Hollywood. So for whatever that's worth, the industry has really just, you know, exploded in popularity and success. And a big part of that is that people who were, you know, young and just coming of age in the 80s and 90s, when games were becoming more prevalent, especially in-home games, those kids from the 80s and 90s are now grown adults who have expendable income and who have families of their own that they want to share this stuff with. Mm. And they've now become a demographic for advertisers to market to. So it's serious business. I mean, it's not like we're not talking about a fringe group of teenagers in their basements anymore. We're talking about something that's become prevalent across all levels of society and across all kinds of people, all ages, income ranges, genders, backgrounds. I mean, this is a major force, and we haven't talked about it in some time on The Positive Mind, so we wanted to have that conversation today and hear from our listeners and discuss and debate it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm still all you Pac-Man users out there. Is Pac-Man still around?
Sure.
They didn't change it, I hope. Is it still the same way?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can still get it on your phone.
Yeah. Because I had like compulsive behaviors when I picked that up, and I picked that up in my mid-20s.
Okay.
You know, I would like scour the environment for quarters.
Right.
Like when I was away from the game, you know, in the morning or even at night or somebody else's house or in their bedrooms or stuff, and I'd look for quarters. And I did think about it quite a bit. And actually during the game, I mean, I would, you know, this was where you would hold the console. I mean, this is, you could actually go to an arcade machine and hold it. And there's nothing like going to an arcade. I mean, you tell me if there's a difference. Going to an arcade and playing a game on your iPad.
It's a totally different
feeling. It's a totally different experience. Yeah. So you know, I had all I had some signs of like a real major compulsive disorder around Pac-Man.
Tell me more about that.
Well,
you're just like scrounging for quarters.
Like
nonstop?
I said, I was scrounging for quarters. I would hold the machine. I mean, I would grab the machine, and sometimes, you know, it's this little wheel that you're and you know, I almost feel like I could break the wheel. I mean, the drive to escape the Pac-Man was just so deep that it was like a running that
the little
ghosts. You know, my stomach. You know, I mean, I would get tense and tight. I'd have physical reactions to it. And I'd talk about it with people and how excited I was that I achieved like 100,000.
Right.
You know,
So was that the main game?
And somebody watched me play. Actually, it was my brother. He saw me play and he said, "Man, you're in a frenzy."
Oh, I thought he was going to say, you know.
You're in a frenzy. You're not that good, Kevin. I've never seen you like this. You're in a frenzy. And I stopped playing.
Wow.
I stopped playing because he was right. I mean, I could do without it. And, you know, it wasn't like it kept me awake at night, but he was right. I mean, I really was supercharged, and it would last for a few hours after playing too.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm very interested in the addictive qualities of these games and wondering parents' feedback about the addictive qualities and if they notice any behavior change in their children. And of course, all this is reversible. The thing about the Psychology Today study, which is a 20-year study, was that In the short term, it does lead, watching aggressive and violent video games does lead to, or can lead to, aggressive behavior in the short term for younger people. In the long term, no effect at all.
Right.
So,
and I would counter that with how many of those kids were already predisposed to be aggressive, to display aggressive behaviors. I don't know whether that was accounted for, but yeah. I think it's a possibility.
Well, yeah, it's a hard thing to measure.
And again, what about movies and the impact of film, mm-hmm. right? I mean, think about, you know, the Die Hard movies, the Lethal Weapon movies. Movies, I mean, I think modern films are not as violent as, you know, the movies of the late 20th century. There is a lot less shooting going on. I mean, I saw the recent Avengers movie in theaters,
uh-huh.
and you don't really see any blood. You don't really see anyone getting shot. There's a lot of action, like the fighting, but there's not a lot of real gore or true bloody violence. And I think that's on the wane.
Well, that's one thing we should investigate. You know, has any campaign been against violence in movies, and has it reduced the amount of contact and violent? I certainly agree. I think that, yeah, somehow movies are less violent. Remember the 70s. So
definitely
it's a change.
We're going to be taking a short musical break. Well, we'd love to take your calls at 212-757-5555. Experiences from gamers, parents and friends and relatives of gamers, the impact it's had on your life, positive or negative. Again, we're taking a short musical break, and we'll be back after this. Thank you. also Baiano with the Super Mario theme and a little Brazilian flavor. Getting ready for those Rio Olympics coming up. You're tuned into The Positive Mind. We're talking about video games. We have a caller on the line, Michael. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Hey, good. Mike.
I'm coming into the conversation a little bit late, so I apologize. But I did hear you guys talking about how television is, or movies, are a little less violent nowadays. And I, not that I disagree necessarily, but I am currently watching Daredevil on Netflix, which is unbelievably bloody and gory in, like, such an extreme sort of way. I mean, I'm sure that's the director's trying to make a point, but I'm just not 100% sure that I 100% agree. It's like Game of Thrones is quite bloody and Walking Dead is, you know, macabre, and there's a fair amount of violence for sure still prevalent in our society.
I would definitely agree with that, Michael. I was mostly referring to mainstream blockbuster theater hits versus, you know, stuff that's on television or premium content like HBO or, say, Netflix. But what about video games? What's your experience with video games?
I mean, I'm kind of dealing with a similar issue because I have a 9-year-old and I love video games, so I'm constantly want to play them with him. But, you know, 9 years old is definitely an issue for me. So the amount of time that I play with him is constantly being challenged by my wife. And, you know, I remember being a kid and spending the entire day, if I could, playing video games. So that's definitely an issue. But then, you know, the violence-wise, I'm very conscious of it, for sure. I definitely stick to a lot of the Nintendo games and things of that nature because they're a little more sensitive, I think, for a younger audience, a little less overtly violent. I do have some more violent games on the Wii, but I really do try to avoid playing them with my son. But he's really interested in it, you know? Kids definitely want to play with guns and, you know, are interested in that sort of thing. And, you know, so it's a challenge for sure.
So you monitor it for him. You really pull him back from anything that shows some violence, or you do it with him? You play these?
It's not anything with violence. It's more like, you know, things that are overtly violent. I mean, like, I have a couple gun games, Call of Duty, things of that nature that I don't let him play because I just think 9-year-old is just not that appropriate for, like, war and shooting and killing, you know?
Exactly.
Whether it's really, really bloody is not really all that relevant. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Do you see, is he ever compulsive about playing? Do you,
I mean, compulsive, like we want to play all the time?
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's completely addictive. I mean, I work in mobile, so I've been using, you know, an iPhone and a smartphone since nearly he was a baby. And, you know, I've had to keep that in check. And I have my own, I would say, personal addiction issues with video equipment. So it's something we're both struggling with, I would say. But he's he asks to use the device all the time. I mean, it gets to the point where I'm constantly threatening him to, like, you know, you're not going to be able to use it for a week if you keep nagging me, you know?
Right. So, you are able to set boundaries, though, it sounds like, with your son around this stuff.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, it's every day. You know, he'll wake up in the morning and be like, can I check my video game to collect, you know, to collect? Because the games are designed to, you know, log in every day and get your money or whatever your upgrade is, you know?
Right.
So it's every day and, you know, constant throughout the day. So he'll get home from school and ask the same question. And, you know, it's always a question of like, well, how much do I have to read in order for me to get some video game time? Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. Just mow the lawn.
We're working on that.
Well, it sounds like he's in great hands. Do you play any games that are social? Like, do you do what Ben does? He says there are these games that you can connect other people with.
I mean, a lot of the games that he's playing and we play together have a social element to them. But I always feel like the social element is pretty minimal. Like, you know, you'll get this extra thing if you connect with somebody, or if you connect with them, they'll help you in some minor way. But I'm thinking of, like, there was a Nintendo Me video game or mobile app that was going around. A lot of my friends were sort of into it, but, like, that's social, but it was so lame. I don't know.
Not sophisticated enough.
Well, Mike, thanks so much for the call. We're going to try to get some other callers, but I appreciate your contribution today.
All right, have a good
thanks,
one, guys.
Sure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. It's 212-757-5555. We are talking about video games, the pros and cons, the effect on your life. you know, there's a lot of positions on this, Kevin, and I'm sure that we're going to hear some different ones.
Yeah, and Michael seems like he has a great handle on it, a great history of it with himself, but also with his child, you know.
Well, Michael's an example of why video games, you know, have become so successful and so widespread, is that the generation that grew up with them has now come of age and is now having their children of their own.
Right.
And
right.
as I said before, is sharing that experience with their children.
Yeah. And so I had no idea it could be a bonding thing between a parent and their
I think so.
But you're right. I mean, he grew up on it, so he has mobile devices. He's in the mobile world, he says. So he's so adapted to all these mobile devices. That's part of it that keeps me away from it. It just seems intimidating to learn how to turn the thing on and maneuver the game to get to a place where you can actually enjoy it.
Well, you learned Pac-Man, didn't you?
Well, Pac-Man was simple. You know, it was just that thing in the middle, and you just rotated it. So, I mean, is it that simple?
You know, I think it's gotten more complicated for sure. Right. But, you know, like anything, there's going to be a learning curve.
And you were saying about surgeons, remember?
Right. So there was a study out of a federal government organization. I can't remember the name of it. The National Council... Let me try to find it here. The National Center for Biotechnology Information, the NCBI.
Okay.
They did a study and they found that surgeons, right, young, inexperienced surgeons with extensive video game experience could perform as well or even better than experienced surgeons without the experience in video games.
So say this again.
So a young surgeon just starting out, just out of med school.
Okay.
Who has extensive experience with video games and the hand-eye coordination that happens through that and the rapid decision-making and problem-solving skills that comes from that can perform as effectively or even more effectively than an older, experienced surgeon who has no experience with video games.
Fantastic.
So, look, there's, you know, as we said, there's as many studies as there are opinions, and, you know, some of them are pointing to negative effects. Some of them are pointing to constructive, positive effects. The reality is somewhere in the middle. The reality is more of a gray area. Like, sure, there are positive, constructive effects, but there are also definitely going to be, you know, destructive effects, especially, you know, when the compulsive, dependent playing starts happening and it becomes a means of an escape rather than, you know, a simple pleasure. I think everything in moderation, right? I mean, just like you wouldn't want to watch TV 6 or 8 hours a day, there has to be a moderate amount of, say, playing video games.
Right.
So, again, our number here is 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. We're talking about video games, their cultural impact, their impact on you personally, how they've affected your life, whether for better or for worse. And interesting call there with Michael, because that was exactly the kind of person I mentioned earlier who has grown up with it and now is passing it to the next generation. And I think they're going to see a lot more of that in the coming years.
And he's controlling it and monitoring it with his young one. But even with the control, that the child is very obsessive about it, wakes up thinking about it.
Right.
So there is that driven component to it that I'm curious about. I'm really curious about kids that are playing it without the supervision, how much that drivenness is accentuated.
Well, it's a really powerful reward model, as I mentioned earlier. I mean, it's a very powerful thing. The way that the games create tasks and expectations, and that the player then follows that up and completes that and is then rewarded, it taps into a very base and deep, you know, place in our brain chemistry that releases all kinds of, you know, happy chemicals, as we've been talking about on the show in recent months.
Dopamine. I mean, it really is. I mean, what does a drug do? A drug gives you a flood of dopamine, 10 times the normal amount. And so gaming can be labeled an addiction because it can give you the same kind of dopamine rush. And when you're without it, here's what used to be a sign of addiction. If you continue to do the behavior and there are negative consequences, and as a negative consequence accumulate and escalate, do you still do the behavior? Now, what could be some bad behaviors or bad consequences for gamers, for young gamers?
Well, you could the first one that comes to mind is schoolwork suffers, right?
Right. Right. And what else?
I would also think maybe a lack of social opportunity that comes from being, you know, stuck in the same place.
Relationships.
Sure.
Schoolwork, relationships, aggressive behavior.
Well, I don't know about aggressive behavior. You know? I think that's up for debate. But certainly physical condition. You know, I think a kid who's outside playing physical games and sports for a few hours a day is almost always going to be in better shape than a kid who's inside sitting down playing a video game.
Right. Good one. That's a great one. So these negative consequences accumulate and you continue with behavior is a good sign of addiction. Now, withdrawal. What happens when you take it away? Does the person become irritable or anxious or depressed? Anxious, nervous, have trouble sleeping or bad dreams. How about bad dreams? When you play games, do you get any sort of things showing up in your dreams?
I don't, it doesn't affect my dreams. I mean, I don't know if it does for other people. It may, but, that's never been a problem for me.
Weight gain, weight loss?
No, I've been pretty much stable since I was
restless,
16.
Depressed mood, all these things and physical symptoms of some kind, like a stomach ache or something. So when you're withdrawing from something and you have these signs of being addicted to something. And so that's what they're finding with some gaming that, and even Michael's child is showing the compulsive, but he's not showing any addictive and withdrawal habits and traits. But he's being strictly monitored. So I don't know. I mean, we should do a study on addiction, gaming and addiction. And you've never been close to that edge, or have you?
To gaming and addiction?
Yeah, I mean, for me, Pac-Man was close to an addiction until somebody
said...
Maybe
when I was younger, you know, my teen years, more so than, you know, any other time. I would say probably from the ages of 10 to 13, it was more of a problem. But not something that's really followed me into adulthood, no.
What did it feel for you? Like, when I... Because this is one thing, like, with callers... When I see somebody on a subway, I mean, what is it filling?
Well, it depends on the type of game. So, you know, we know that there are multiple reasons that kids play. We know from, for example, some of the studies that I've cited and some books that have been written, we know that there are several reasons kids play. Let me just get this phone call and we'll be right back.
Yeah, so, you know, that's my question. When I see somebody on the subway, I mean, obviously it's filling time. But is there anything else it could be filling? When I see my nephews playing, you know, and they're not interacting with each other, they're just so compulsively focused on the game, or even when they're watching TV that way, I wonder what's being missed with all of this electronic stimulation? What are they filling up with each other and with themselves by this electronic stimulation? You know, I have my theories. And so when I see somebody on the subway, you know, I try to see, I'm trying to stay curious about it rather than judge it.
Well, so the reasons, Kevin, real quick, before we take this caller who's waiting on the line, the reasons that kids play, this is from a Harvard study, the number one reason is excitement or fun.
Right.
Number two is sociability.
Okay, you can
because
talk
it
about
can be, it. Right, and it can be something, an activity that friends play together. Number three is emotions, because it can be a form of stress relief, avoiding loneliness. It can be an
avoiding
outlet.
Loneliness.
Yeah, it can be an outlet for anger or other difficult emotions. And the last one is simply boredom.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But let's take a call real quick. We have Hank on the line. I think that's Hank, right?
Vance. Like Sir Lancelot.
Oh, okay. Hey, Vance. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for asking. I hear what you guys are definitely saying. And, like, the negative effects of video games are the one thing we watch out for. But I also see a definite correlation between the personalities of people and what we do. For instance, you know, cell phones have actually killed more people than video games. And you know why? Because we took our attention off of the street. We were driving a car, and we ended up dead.
Sure.
It's the same thing with video games. I played games that had nothing to do with violence, when I played the PlayStation at home, and you would just walk around as an avatar of yourself, and the amount of violence and rage I used to hear against the female players from the male players was amazing. I used to understand my friends who were girls who played the games as well. They were like, we don't want to play no more because it was violent towards them.
Wow.
So it's something inside of us as well.
Meaning men.
Will give you hand-eye coordination. Yeah. But go ahead.
You were saying inside of us. You mean inside of men?
Yes, men and women. But it's just a violent tendency. Like, people feel like a freedom at home when you're playing online to just do things and say things to one another that you won't say in person. But when you're playing when you're online, you're like free. You're a different person.
That's interesting, Vince. And I
just
noticed
this. And if you also noticed what you were saying about Columbine earlier,
yeah.
the movies, they're not blamed. There was, during the Columbine time, Arnold Schwarzenegger had this Gatling gun, the father of all machine guns, firing over our heads. You know, that's like a really manly gun. And they didn't mention that, the movie having a direct correlation to the children being shot. No, because, you know, the movie industry doesn't want to be blamed for the video games. Yes, you can trace directly the violence to children, but violence is a scalpel. You know, you use it depending on your situation. If you know martial arts, you defend yourself.
So, Vince, it sounds to me like you're saying that maybe some of the violent behavior is not, you know, the video games are not necessarily the problem, but maybe the symptom of the problem that's already
We're unlocking it. Like, Facebook, reason people show this rage and people get attacked, like Facebook, is because what people do, it gives them an outlet. They just attack the girl who had the acne on her face, and then, you know, she had that beautiful picture that showed up in the news. This poor lady, she was just had to change her life because people started sending her hate mail. But it had nothing to do with a video game. She just, you know, she put on some makeup, and she looked beautiful by hiding all her blemishes. And then suddenly everybody started sending her hate mail because she looked great.
Well, it's an interesting point, and what you're drawing
ahead.
The connection between how people will act through the internet and behind a screen, which now with the advent that games have gone online, that behavior is similar now. I mean, like, you're mentioning a lot of social media examples, which is certainly something that we, you know, have talked about. But, you know, it's a good point to note, Vance, that people will certainly act differently online than they will in person. But I want to thank you for the call, Vance, and see
You're
if
welcome.
We can maybe get one more caller in today.
Sure.
And
all right.
Thanks for tuning in
Very
and
welcome.
Calling today. Thank
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Vance.
You're welcome.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. We might have time for one more caller today. 212-757-5555. Again, 212-757-5555.
So what was that with the women that he was talking about? That the women stopped playing the game because men would be aggressive towards them?
Yeah, so he was talking about games that connect online.
Okay.
Where people play together.
Oh, okay.
Right? And, you know, that he was witnessing abusive behavior in that context.
Oh, so women would get these comments against them aside from the game, and that would make them want to stop playing. Interesting. So, well, that's an angle that we don't hear much about. We haven't heard much about women's participation. You're saying that almost 50% of the gamers out there are women, which is a shocking statistic to me. And
the age gap, too, has changed. You know, it's no longer necessarily a domain of young people, because young people who were playing games in the 80s and 90s, you know, they've grown up, and they didn't necessarily put the games on the shelf. So, you know, it's changing.
Yeah.
I want to take another call. We have Matt on the line. Matt, thanks for calling in.
Hey, what's going on?
How you
thanks
doing,
for having
Matt?
Me.
Hey.
Well, I wanted to talk about, you know, one thing with games that's changed is that they've intertwined with the internet.
Right. That's what Vance was saying.
And so when I was born in 1988, so I remember vividly Tetris and Star Fox.
Okay.
And but now what we have on YouTube, in fact, some of the biggest and fastest growing YouTube channels are actually game, they review games.
That's
and
true.
They actually tell you strategies and all that.
Yeah, the number one YouTube channel with the most subscribers is a video game channel, and this channel on YouTube grosses millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, who would love to just sit around and make money reviewing video games.
Well, believe it, people are doing it. You know, and there's demand out there for that sort of content.
Yep, that's right.
So, what are you playing these days?
Well, I got a PS4, and my girlfriend got me a new 65-inch TV for this Christmas, and we got the new Call of Duty.
Oh boy!
So, yeah, and I got her playing it. I'm an over-the-road trucker, so when I'm not home, that's all she does is call me and tell me, you know, I got third place or something like that.
Where's home, Matt?
I'm out of Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Matt, I want to thank you for calling in. We're right about to run out of time, but I appreciate the call, and safe travels. Drive safe. And thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Take care. And I think that's about what we'll be able to do in phone calls today, Kevin.
Call of the Wild? What was it, his game?
He said he was playing Call of Duty.
And is that like guns? Is there guns in that?
Yes.
Is she playing a shooting game? That's what I wanted to ask.
I don't know.
Anyway.
We can continue this tomorrow, you know, Kevin. We'll be back same time, same place, 1 p.m. on 99.5 FM WBAI. Thanks to everyone who called in, Vance, Michael, Matt, and we'll be back tomorrow, 1 p.m., 99.5 FM WBAI. Thank you.